Welcome to Tori Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Lechem Aleph, Perek Yud-Chet, Chapter 18. Our last parak saw Elio declare a drought and then go on a journey led by Hashem to Nachal Crete and then to the house of the widow from Tzarfat. Perek 18 brings us back to Achav and Bnei Israel dealing with the famine that was caused by the drought. We learn that it has been 3 years since Elio declared the drought, and now Hashem sends him back to the people, telling Eliyahu, Lech hira'eh el Achav, that's namatar al pnei adamah. Go and show yourself to Achav, and I will give rain on the face of the earth. In the first part of the parak, Elio encounters Ovadia, who works for Achav, and the second part of the parak is the famous encounter between Elio and Achav on Har Carmel, on the mountain of Carmel. Elio leaves the widow's house at Hashem's command and goes to find Achav. The pasuk tells us, "Va'rav chazak b'Shomron." The famine was very, very strong in Shomron, and Shomron now has become the name of Malchut Yisrael. The capital city is known as the whole country. Meanwhile, Achav is with his servant Ovadia, scouring the land for some type of vegetation so that they won't lose all of their animals. The text gives us some background as to who Ovadia is. In Pasuk Daled, verse 4, it says, "Vayhi b'achrit Izevel et nevei Hashem," when Izevel went on a campaign of killing out all the prophets of Hashem, "Vayikach Ovadiah mea neviim," Ovadia took 100 neviim, 100 prophets, "Vayichbeim chamishim ish b'ma'ara," he hid them in 2 caves, 50 men in each cave, "V'chilkaleim lechem umayim," and he provided them with bread and water. We learn a lot from this passage. First of all, we learn that Izebel was on a campaign of killing out Nevi'im. We didn't know that before. Izebel wasn't really a character so much in our story, but now we realize that along with Izebel bringing in her Baal, she's also been trying to eradicate the name of Hashem. We also learn that Ovadia has been slowly helping these Nevi'im escape, and we can't help but notice the parallel of Ovadia supporting the Nevi'im with bread and water, and Hashem having supported Eliyahu during this time with bread and meat. Achav and Ovadia now divide up the area of the land, and they're now going to each go in their own way to search for vegetation. It is then that Eliyahu appears to Ovadia, who recognizes him immediately, falls on his face, and says, "Ha'atazeh Adoni Eliyahu, is it you, my master, Eliyahu? Remember, no one has seen or heard from Eliyahu since the announcement of the drought 3 years ago." Eliyahu confirms that yes, it is him, and he tells him to go tell Achav, "Hinei Eliyahu, behold, Eliyahu is here." Ovadia is resistant at first. Achav has been searching the country up and down for Eliyahu, and there hasn't been a trace of him. If Ovadia tells Achav that he saw Eliyahu, and then Achav come back to encounter him, and Eliyahu disappears again, then Achav will take his anger out on Ovadia. Eliyahu promises that he'll stay, echoing the language he used to declare the drought. In Pasuk Te'vav, verse 15, "Vayomer Eliyahu, Chai Hashem Tzolkot asher amadati lefanav, I swear by the name of Hashem that I stood before him, ki hayom era'ah alav, that today I will appear to him." Before we move on to what's next, which is the confrontation between Achav and Eliyahu, let's just examine first the confrontation between Eliyahu and Ovadia. Last perek, we discussed that Eliyahu was the one who stood outside society and said no. He is the one who brings the harsh punishment that the people deserve. He makes a declaration, and then he leaves. He doesn't integrate at all into society. There can be no compromises in the face of evil. There can be no misunderstandings as to what Eliyahu's views are. Ovadia takes a different approach. He joins Achav's administration, clearly rising to a high position based on his intimacy with Achav. From this position, he is able to save Nevi'im and hide them from Izebel. He has the means and the knowledge of the country to be able to pull this off. He also has the possibility from this position to possibly influence Achav, maybe slowly try to get him to change his ways. On the other hand, a good person like this, getting close to Achav, risks lending legitimacy to Achav's ways and his administration. The character of Ovadia is a foil to Eliyahu and raises a different possibility of confronting evil. Which is a better way to react with criticism? Should you criticize the person up front, break off ties, declare harsh punishments, yell and scream? Or is criticizing in a different way, integrating and trying to influence slowly, quietly from the inside, and maybe get a chance to do good? And Eliyahu and Ovadia debate this. When Ovadia says to Eliyahu, I don't even know if you're going to stay. You're telling me that you're going to confront Ahav, but you disappeared last time. You gave your drought and then you left. And my way is integration. My way is staying and being with the people. And Eliyahu says to Ovadia, no, I will stay this time. But he has to promise it. He has to swear it to Ovadia for Ovadia to believe him. In the sense that Ovadia says to Eliyahu, where have you been? I've been here and I'm trying to navigate. And Eliyahu's almost his response to Ovadia is, that's not how I operate. I don't integrate. I don't lend any legitimacy to Ahav. I wouldn't work with Ahav. I work against Ahav. And we have these two different ways to deal with somebody that you seriously oppose. This short passage also tells us something about Ahav. While he's scouring the country to look for Eliyahu to kill him, he is also scouring the country looking for vegetation. There's a certain commitment to his animals, to the people. There's a certain sense of humility that we see in Ahav that he's willing himself to do it. He doesn't just send his servant Ovadia. He says, no, we'll split the land. I'll do some and you'll do some. And we do see these glimmers of what Eliyahu was fighting for in Ahav. Why the Texans spend so much time with Ahav, gives him so many chances, gives him this amazing Navi, Eliyahu. When Ahav sees Eliyahu for the first time, he snarls at him. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Vayikra ot Ahav et Eliyahu, when he sees him, Vayomer Ahav elav. Ahav says to him, Hatazeh ocher Yisrael? Is it you, Eliyahu, the enemy of Bnei Yisrael? Ahav completely blames Eliyahu for bringing the drought and all the devastation that came over the past 3 years. But Eliyahu responds in Yudchen 18, Vayomer lo acharti et Yisrael. Ki imata, you think I'm the opponent? You think I'm the enemy? It's you, ubeit avicha, to your father's house. It's you and Omri and what you've done. Vazavchem et mitzvot Hashem vatelech acharei ha'baalim. Because you left the mitzvot of Hashem, you left the commandments, and you went after idolatry. Don't you realize that what I did is only as a result of your action? Ahav only sees the punishment, and therefore he blames Eliyahu for the punishment. Eliyahu says, you have to take responsibility for your actions that led to the punishment. And they're locked there in this debate. And Eliyahu then says to Ahav, you know what? Let's just have this out. He tells him to meet him at Har Carmel for a showdown between Hashem and the Nevi'i Baal. Instead of scoffing at Eliyahu's demand, which we might have expected Ahav to do, Ahav actually does it. Why he does it isn't clear. Maybe it's a sign of how desperate he is for the drought to end. And again, we see Ahav cares about his people. He wants the drought to end. He would rather give in and have a possibility of ending the drought than stand his ground and say, you know, I'm not listening to you. I'm not taking any commands from you, Eliyahu. It's also a possibility that maybe Ahav himself has actually convinced himself of the truth of the Baal, but then he saw Eliyahu make the drought, and now he's unsure which God is true. So Ahav does, he gathers the people to Har Carmel and all of the Nevi'i Baal and the Nevi'i Asherah, the prophets of Baal and the prophets of the Asherah tree, and everyone comes, 850 prophets, the Nevi'i Sheker, false prophets, and all of Bnei Israel come to watch what's happening at Har Carmel. Eliyahu then turns to the people and to Ahav in verse 21, and it says, "Vaygash Eliyahu el ha'am." He comes close to the nation. Vayomer, "Ad matay atem poschim al shtei ha'sipim?" How much longer are you going to jump back and forth between opinions? The word poschim means to be lame, and he says to them, "You're jumping back and forth. It's like you're lame in both legs. You're lame in both opinions. Neither of your opinions makes sense." Im Hashem holokim. If Hashem is the God, so follow him. If Baal is the God, so follow him. And Eliyahu is telling them, you can't keep two mutually exclusive opinions in your head and think that you're going to follow both of them. You're actually lame in both of the opinions. You're following neither of them. Monotheism says that polytheism doesn't exist. And polytheism says that monotheism doesn't exist. You cannot simultaneously worship Hashem and the Baal. And the nation, Lo anu ha'am oto davar. They don't answer him anything. They actually don't know. They've been so scarred religiously that they don't know what's right anymore. It also shows us that despite Ahav's institutionalizing of Baal, they hadn't bought in completely. They weren't ready to just scorn Eliyahu. And this, again, might have been the result of Eliyahu's drought, that it really may have worked, that they've seen already the power of Hashem and now they're open to seeing which God is true. Eliyahu proposes a test. He and the Nevi'i Baal will each prepare a sacrifice. Then they will each pray to their gods. whichever God responds in fire, meaning whichever God will send fire from the heavens to consume the sacrifice, that is the true God. And this is a very typical test of Elio. Elio associates with fire, with a fiery response. The nation agrees that this is a good test. The Nevi'i Baal go first, they prepare their cow, and then they call out to Baal from morning until afternoon, for hours. At noontime, Elio mocks them. Vayomer, Ke'uba Kol Gadol, he says, why you yell a little bit louder? Ki Elohim who? Isn't he a god? So maybe he just didn't hear you. Ki Siach V'Chi Siglo. Maybe he's not available. Chi Derech Lo. Maybe he's away. Ulay Ashan. Who? Maybe he's sleeping. Vayikat. Maybe he's in the bathroom, Elio says. And he's obviously pointing out all the Baal's physical characteristics that makes it so obviously limited and constructed by man. But this actually doesn't faze the Nevi'i Baal. They do. Vayikru'u b'kol gadol. They actually call out in a louder voice. And then they start whipping themselves. And they start cutting themselves, as was their way of worship. And finally, at mincha time, so now we're 3/4 of the way through the day, they're exhausted. They stop. They're dripping with blood. And the pasuk tells us, ain kol, ve'ain oneh, ve'ain keshev. There's no voice. There's no answer. There's no attention. And obviously, there's no Baal. It's not real. And finally, it's Eliel's turn. And he takes 12 stones and he puts them together into an altar representing the 12 tribes. And what he wants to show the people is, when I prove God to you, it's not only that I'm proving that Hashem is the God. I want to prove a larger idea. And that is that we're actually part of another larger entity, which is Knesset Yisrael. And we're unified with another country that has the Beit HaMikdash. We've moved away from our mandate. We've moved away from the way Hashem wanted us to construct our country, what he told you, Rav Ben Avad. And that once you recognize Hashem, the next step is reconciling with your brothers and with reconciling with the Beit HaMikdash. He prepares his sacrifice on the Mizbeach, and then he begins to pour water on it. 12 buckets, and obviously the number is significant, and the water drips down over the korban and fills a small moat around the mizbeach. Elio is clearly trying to make it harder for himself to light the korban on fire to prove that it can only be Hashem who did it. But just imagine the eyes of Bnei Israel riveted on this mizbeach, watching the water that they crave so desperately in the middle of a drought dripping down over an animal and then wasted as it gets sucked into the ground before their eyes, understanding that if it works, they too will have water. And they can restart their economy. Pasuk Lamed Vav 36. Vayhi ba'alot ha-mincha. It comes to be mincha time. Vayigash Elio ha-navi. Elio the prophet approaches the people once again, but now he's also approaching Hashem. Vayomer Hashem Elokei Avram Yitzchak v'Yisrael. Hashem, the God of my forefathers. Halo hayom yivada ki ata Elokim v'Yisrael. Let it be known today that you are the God of Yisrael. Va'ani avdecha. And I'm your servant. Ubidvarcha asiti et kol hadvarim ha'ila. And it was only at your word that I did all of these things. Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Aneni Hashem, aneni. Answer me, God. Answer me. Ve'yidu ha'am hazeh, ki'ata Hashem Elokim. Let this nation know that you are their true God. Va'ata hisibuta el libam acharonit. And you had turned their ways away from you. We recall at Elio's prayer that Hashem never told him to make this test at Har Carmel, or at least it wasn't in the psukim. And it's very possible that Elio did this on his own. Remember, Hashem just said, go appear to Achav and I will bring rain. Perhaps it was Elio who decided to do it in this way, and now he has to beg Hashem to do what Elio already told the people that he would do. He asks Hashem to acknowledge that everything that Elio does, he does for Hashem, and that the whole purpose was for the people to recognize Hashem and reconnect with him. Elio's tefila works. Pasuk Lamedchet, verse 38, Vatipol Esh Hashem. The fire comes out and it consumes not only the sacrifice, but also the branches. It consumes the stones. It consumes the dust, and the water is licked up from the moat. When Bnei Israel see this miracle and Hashem's realness, without a doubt, Pasuk Lametet, verse 39, Vayar kol ha'am v'si v'yiplu al pinim, they fall on their faces, v'yomru, Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem hu Elokim, they shout out, Hashem is the true God. Elio tells Achav to go eat and drink, because the rain is now coming. And then in an act of complete humility, Elio puts his head between his knees and davens to Hashem for rain. He lifts his head 6 times and tells his nar to go his helper to go check for rain, but each time the helper comes back and says, Ein mu'ma, there's nothing. Only on the seventh time does the Na'ar return and say in Pasuk Mem Dalet, verse 44, Vayhi b'shvi'it, Vayomer, Hinei avktana, Kekaf ish, Olem yam, I see a small cloud, the size of a man's fist, is coming up from the sea. And Eliyahu says, Vayomer, Alei, go up, Emor el Achav, tell Achav, who's now celebrating, Asor v'reid, V'lo yatzrecha hageshem, set up your chariot and go down back to your palace so that you won't be stopped by the rains, meaning heavy rains are coming. The rain comes only after Eliyahu davens and only after he realized that it is indeed Hashem who controls the rain. The parak ends with Hashem giving Eliyahu superhuman strength and Eliyahu using it to run in front of Achav's chariot, humbling himself before Achav, acting as if he was one of his servants. The message is clear. Achav has so many good qualities. He cares about his people. He is a king who can make the country prosper. If he uses these qualities to reject Hashem and cut Hashem out of the picture, Eliyahu will be his ocher. He will stand against him. He will be his adversary. But if he recognizes Hashem, then Eliyahu will also recognize the sovereignty of the king and will lower himself before him to be Achav's servant. The question that remains in front of us is, why did Chazal choose these words, Hashem hu ha'elokim, Hashem is the true God, from the end of the Har Carmel story to end our Yom Kippur service? On the holiest day of the year, why do we invoke the words of the people who just a minute ago were worshipping idolatry? Malbim notes that at this moment, Bnei Israel had total emunah. They were no longer jumping back and forth between two opinions. At the end of our Yom Kippur service, we want to capture that sense of faith. We may have gone into the day somewhat conflicted by sin, but at the end we too are sure of our convictions and echo Bnei Israel at this time. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs explains that this episode of Har Carmel was a supreme example of a prayer that was answered. So many of our prayers take years and years to be answered, and to some of our prayers the answer is no. So at the end of Yom Kippur, after spending the whole day wrapped in prayer, we end by asking, please Hashem, answer our prayers the way you answered Eliyahu on Har Carmel, immediately, spectacularly, and let us see it, like the people who said, Hashem hu Elokim. Perhaps an additional reason is that by the next Perek, Bnei Israel are going to be back to their idolatrous ways. Har Carmel, like most blatant miracles, does not have the impact that we think and hope that it will have. And yet, at this moment, Hashem forgives them, despite what will come next, and gives them rain. We too turn to Hashem and ask Him to judge us as we are now at the end of Yom Kippur, full of goodness, full of tshuva, full of good intentions, without peeking into our future and seeing how all of our resolutions turn out. Har Carmel until today stands as one of the seminal miracles of our time, one which a Navi took the time and effort to prove Hashem to a group of confused and wayward people. It stands in our history as a bright moment of unity and goodness in the history of Malchut Yisrael. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilah Nishmat Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.